We're in Numbers this evening, chapter 1. Well, if you've read ahead, you know why the book is called Numbers. The Hebrew title for the book comes from the first verse where it says, "And the Lord spake unto Moses in the wilderness." Bimidbar is just simply in the wilderness. That is the Hebrew name for the book, in the wilderness. But because of the numbering in the first several chapters, and then again at the end of the book, the males of Israel that were ready to go to war were numbered of the tribes, and the numbers of the Levites are given, and the encampments. Because of that, the Septuagint, the translators, called it arithmoi, where we get arithmetic, and then, of course, the Latins, when it was translated in the Latin, it was given the name numeroi, and we call the book Numbers now. There are a lot of numbers in there. But as we read it, I want you to remember, and hopefully impress on our hearts, and the Lord will do that, but these are numbers of people. And Lord knows every one of them. He knows number one, he knows number 3,000, he knows number 10,000, he knows them all. To you and I, as we read through these statistics and the numbers of men in the tribes, it's almost like, well, let's move on to one of the stories. Let's get to, you know, Kibroth Hataavar, let's get to Balaam and Balak. No, as we look at these things, all of them are a picture of individuals. And it's important for us to note that because this is the book of journeying. Leviticus was God giving to Israel the ordinances and the sacrifices because the tabernacle had been erected in the last chapter of Exodus. For a period of about a month, the book of Leviticus transpires, instructions are given, sacrifices begin, and as we pick up here in Numbers, we're in the second year in the second month. We were in the second year in the first month in the end of Exodus. Now, about a month has gone by, and now the children of Israel are ready to begin their march to Canaan. They have received the law. They've been received the instruction in regards to the tabernacle and worship and the priesthood, and things have been consecrated and ordained, and the sacrifices have begun. Now they are ready to pick up and to move to Canaan, to the promised land. We will find out in the first chapter there are 600,000, and we'll look at the number, fighting men between 20 and 50. If we take into account younger men and older men and women, infants, we're looking at between 2 and 3 million people that are going to be mustered and moved. And can you imagine a city the size of Baltimore, 3 million people, all of a sudden getting up and moving? Just the whole city get up and start walking somewhere. And they would move when the cloud moved. The pillar, now just try to imagine how large this pillar of cloud during the day and pillar of fire of night must have been if all of this, a city would see it. And it would pick up off the tabernacle. When it rose up off the tabernacle and people saw it rise off the tabernacle, they would start packing. Everybody would run, grab their kids, roll their tent up, get everything ready. And as it moved, they would follow. And God here gives them the order then that they're to follow in, each tribe and the order they're to march in and where the tabernacle and those things are to be carried between what tribes and how and then which tribe is supposed to be the last and guarding the rear as they went and how they were to be prepared for war. They had been a nation of slaves and now God is numbering them and training them and making them into an army because they will be his tool to bring judgment on the Canaanites and then to give them the land. Remember back in Genesis chapter 15, verse 16, God had said to Abraham, "I'm going to take your descendants down into Egypt for 400 years, for four generations. And then I'll bring them into Canaan." And the reason we're waiting, he says, and one of the reasons he gives Abraham, is the iniquity of the Amorite is not yet full. In other words, God would extend 400 years of grace to the Canaanites, hoping that some would turn. But they would be demoralized and disintegrate morally and spiritually to the point now where God will use Israel as his chastening rod to judge them. Yet there will be those, even amongst the Canaanites, like Rahab, there will be those that will turn and will be saved, that will turn and become part of the nation of the true and living God. His grace is still there. But now he's raising up his people as an army. Now, they will come to the borders, to Kadesh Barnea, immediately as we begin our journeying, and they will turn away in unbelief. And they will wander for 38 years. Deuteronomy chapter 1 verse 2 tells us it's an 11-day journey from Horeb to Canaan. It could have been 11 days. And it was 38 years. Now the lessons that are there for us, as Romans 15 tells us, and 1 Corinthians chapter 10, that these are examples for us, that upon whom the ends of the ages have come, that we should learn. Their lives are an admonition to us. And there is a picture here of the Christian experience. Having come out of Egypt, having been redeemed by the blood of the Lamb, that's us, God saved us out of the world. And then as he brings us to himself, then we have many spiritual lessons to learn so that we would take, as it were, our inheritance, that we would enter into the promises of God. You know, they say there's 3,000 promises just in the New Testament. It's hard for me to imagine. I haven't counted them. Someone said that. Canaan is not a type of heaven. You know, we hear people crossing over Jordan like they're going, no, 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 there's giants there, there's battles there, there's war there, but it is their inheritance. It is the place where they will take hold of the promises of God. And we are in a struggle. We're in a warfare. There's a warfare for you and I, for our minds. Look at the thing that's happened in Washington this week, and then they show these polls, and Americans say, well, we don't care what the president's done. We don't care how many women are involved. He's doing a good job. You know, I'm making minimum wage. He's raising minimum wage. Or I'm making 17 bucks an hour. I got a nice home. I got a good business. Who cares what he is? Let him do whatever he wants to do. I mean, that's the world that we're being sent to minister to. That's the world that God so loved that he gave his only begotten son. And there is a warfare, and it is for our minds, and it's for our hearts. And we're surrounded with a soup of morals and music and the media and entertainment and things that would take from us and that would pull us down. You know, yesterday, as Elmer Towns was here, and we had the seminar on fasting, and he said that from March 1st to April 9th, many Christian leaders around the country are going on a 40-day fast for survival and revival. Now, when we talk about a 40-day fast, look, he said, look, some of you can make your 40-day fast one day a week for those 40 days. Let that be your fast. Or some of you, he said, don't fast breakfast because most of you don't eat breakfast anyway. What kind of fast is that? But maybe many of you can fast lunch for 40 days, just one meal a day. And the one he didn't mention that I like is he said, you can go on a television fast. Imagine that. Turn that thing off for 40 days. I mean, we're surrounded by that which would pull our hearts and our minds down from the set our affections on things above. And many Christians, you know, go on for years and they never enter into rest. They never enter into God's grace. They never take hold of God's promises. They never grow spiritually. They're never strengthened. They're like these Israelites wandering in the wilderness because of unbelief. So there's a great lesson as we start to pick up the actual journeys and see the pictures that God gives to us. There's remarkable things there for us to take note of. Now, chapter 1 gives us the numbering of the adult males fit to go to war. And this will be for the tape. Chapter 2 is the order of the tribes where they're to encamp. Chapter 3 will give us the numbering of the priests and the Levites. And chapter 4 will give us the Levite duties and the things that are their responsibilities. And take note as we go into this, none of them are left to decide for themselves. None of them just say, well, we'll do whatever we want. Imagine 3 million people doing whatever they want to do. God gives them their place. He gives them their encampments. He orders them the way he wants them to march. He says which tribe marches first, which tribe marches second, fourth, fifth, twelfth, last. He gives the responsibilities to the priests and Levites and tells them what part of the tabernacle they're to carry, they're to pack up, what is their responsibilities. This is all ordered by God. And God says in the New Testament, things are to be done decently and in order. And he's a God of order. Says the Lord spake unto Moses in the wilderness of Sinai in the tabernacle of the congregation on the first day of the second month in the second year after they were come out of the land of Egypt. So they've been out of Egypt 2 years. They're at Sinai at Horeb. Take ye the sum of all the congregation of the children of Israel after their families by the house of their fathers with the number of their names, every male by their polls. From 20 years old and upward, all that are able to go forth to war. Now there was a war, as it were, in Egypt of the taskmaster. Now there's another war. When we're in the world and we're lost, there's one war that goes on in our hearts with emptiness and with the things around us and struggling. And then when we come to Christ, there's a whole new war that begins. So congratulations. Welcome to the new war. And it says in Ecclesiastes, there's no discharge in that war. All that are able to go forth to war in Israel, thou and Aaron shall number them by their armies. And with you there shall be a man of every tribe, every one the head of the house of his fathers. Now he says, for the 12 tribes there will be one prince or a chief person, the head of the tribes. And you can study these names on your own. They're kind of interesting here. These are the names of the men that shall stand with you. For the tribe of Reuben, Elizur. Now, it's interesting to study these names. We don't have the time tonight. Reuben, you remember, in Genesis 49, when Jacob was dying on his deathbed, he said, Reuben, you're unstable as water. You're like boiling water because you went up to your father's bed and took his concubine. Well, for Reuben, his chief man at this point, Elizur, his name means God is a rock. Yes. Reuben, unstable as water. His chief man at this time, God is a rock. Or of Simeon, it says he was known for his cruelty, him and Levi, and for their anger. Chief man in his tribe, Shelumiel, which is the friend of God. Very interesting. Of Judah, Nashon, verse 8, Issachar, Nethaneel. I won't read all their father's names also. Of Zebulun, Eliab. And she's the son of Helon. I can say that one's easy. Verse 10, the children of Joseph, Ephraim, and Manasseh. You see it there in verse 10. Of Benjamin, Abadon. Of Dan, Ahiezer. Who would name your kid Ahiezer? Of Asher, Pagiel. Of Gad, Eliasaph. Of Naphtali, Ahari, the son of Enan. These were the renowned, or the chief men of the congregation, princes of the tribes of their fathers, heads of the thousands in Israel. So these are the chief men now. The Simeon and the original 12 sons of Jacob are long gone. These are the leaders of the tribes. Their names are given. And Moses and Aaron took these men, which are expressed by their names. Isn't that interesting? And they assembled all the congregation together on the first day of the second month, and they declared their genealogies, their pedigrees, after their families, by the house of their fathers, according to the number of the names, from 20 years old and upward, by their polls. And the Lord commanded Moses, so he numbered them in the wilderness of Sinai. Now, we're going to move at breakneck speed here, so pay attention. We're going to look at those that are numbered. The children of Reuben, Israel's eldest son, verse 20. Look down in verse 21. Those that were numbered of Reuben, it tells us there, 46,500 men of Reuben between 20 and 50 able to go to war. 46,000 men. Now, I'll mention this as we go through these numbers. I'll give you the numbers from the numbering at the end of the book so you can see what has happened. So as they begin their wilderness wanderings, the men that are able to go to war of Reuben are 46,500. At the end of the book of Reuben, there are 43,730. They've decreased. Of the children of Simeon, verse 22, down to verse 23, it says 59,300. And at the end of the book of Simeon, there's only 22,200, less than half. Cut in half. Verse 24, the children of Gad, they were numbered. Verse 25, those that were numbered of them, even of the tribe of Gad, were 45,650. At the end of the book, it's 40,500, so several thousand less. verse 26, of the children of Judah, by their generations after their families, notice, by the house of their fathers, according to the number of their names, from 20 years old and upward, all that were able to go forth to war, those that were numbered of them, even of the tribe of Judah, were 74,600. At the end of the book, there are 76,500. So they increased slightly. The children of Issachar, verse 28, verse 29, it tells us of the children of Issachar, 54,400. They increase. At the end of the book, there's 64,300 of them. Of the children of Zebulun, verse 39, of their names, their families, and so forth, numbered, verse 31, it says there were 57,400, and they increase. There's 60,500, so about 3,000 more. Of the children of Joseph, verse 32, and it tells us in verse 33, there were 40,500, and they decreased. This is Ephraim, to 32,500. Of Manasseh, verse 34, the other one of Joseph's sons, verse 35 says, they were numbered, and there were 32,200. Their increase to 52,700, almost 20,000 increase on the tribe. The children of Benjamin, verse 36. Verse 37, it says the children of Benjamin were 35,400. They increased by 10,000, 45,600 at the end of the book. Of the children of Dan, by their generations, after their families, verse 39, 62,700. At the end of the book, there's 64,400. So, 1,800 more. Of the children of Asher, verse 40. At the end of, in the beginning of the book, here's verse 41. 41,500. At the end of the book, there's 53,400. The children of Naphtali, verse 42, that were able to go forth to war. Verse 43 says, those that were numbered of them, even of the tribe of Naphtali, were 53,400. At the end of the book, there is only 45,400. Verse 44 says, these are those which were numbered, which Moses and Aaron numbered, and the princes of Israel, being 12 men, each one was for the house of his father, so were all those that were numbered of the children of Israel by the house of their fathers, from 20 years old upward, all that were able to go forth to war in Israel, even all they that were numbered were 603,550. So their standing army, 603,550. That's bigger than the standing army of the United States right now, by the way. 603,550. Now, at the end of the book, the standing army is 601,730, there's a decrease of 1,820 men. So in 38 years, there's a zero population growth in Israel. That's remarkable, because when we see them from the time 70 souls go down into Egypt, and they're there 400 years, and some figure a different number, but you figure the increase to 2.5 million on an average, that means every 20 to 30 years, the population of Israel had doubled. And yet here's 38 years in the wilderness, they have a zero population growth. In fact, it seems like it drops a little. How sad that when they were in bondage, and they were in Egypt, they were prolific. And they were fruitful in regards to their numbers. Now, they will be in the wilderness, with God feeding them with manna for the next 38 years, with God giving them water from the rock, with God guarding them and giving them victories and asking them to extend their faith to Him. And yet at the end of 38 years, there's a zero population growth, which speaks, I think, of a difficult journey. It speaks of the generation that is judged because of their unbelief. And it says their carcasses fall in the wilderness. And of the 603,500 soldiers, warriors, two will enter the promised land, Joshua and Caleb. 603,500. It means 603,498 die because of unbelief and don't enter in. Two, isn't that remarkable? Two enter in to the promised land. Joshua and Caleb, what a remarkable, remarkable picture God is giving us. And how many, you know, how many Christians just, they don't go on because of unbelief. They, you know, they get saved and they want Jesus as Savior, but you know what I mean? They really hold back. They don't want Jesus as Lord. They want Him as Savior, and then they want to, you know, okay, He can wash my sins, and you know what I mean? And I don't want to get too radical about the Jesus stuff. I'm going to give Him my whole life. I'm going to give Him my whole life, you know. I give Him 50% of my life, or I give Him, you know, 51%. That way He has the greater percentage of my life, and I'm only holding 49% of my own life, you know. And how many we see through unbelief, you know, they go on and they're unfruitful. They never produce. They never, there's no growth. There's no, they're just like this situation here. Because it takes an all-out commitment. You know what? Satan has an all-out commitment to destroy you. In music, in the media, in morality, the powers that are against us. There's a commitment. He works 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Now, I'm thankful, of course, that our dad can beat him. I'm thankful that greater is He that is in you than he that is in the world. I'm thankful the Bible says the evil one comes and he touches us not. But the system that he has set up through unbelieving men and women in this world grates on us continually. And many of us, because of unbelief, never move into the things that God has for us. We never move into the ministry that God has us. Never move into the battle that God has for us. You know, as we go through these first few chapters, we see Israel as warriors, as worshipers, and as workers. You know, that's warfare, fellowship, and service, which is all our inheritance, is part of what will be part of all of our lives. There will be warfare. There's fellowship with God. There's service for Him and for His kingdom. But just think of 603,500 and only two. How sad, entering into the inheritance. Verse 47 says, but the Levites, after the tribe of their families, were not numbered among them. Then they're not numbering the tribe of Levi among the other tribes. The reason is, now look, you'll go back and forth sometimes, you pay attention. There were 12 tribes originally. Levi was one of them. But when Jacob came to Egypt, he took Joseph and said, Joseph, your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, will each be my sons now. So God takes the tribe of Levi and sets Levi aside to serve Him, not giving them an inheritance in the land like the other tribes, but there still remains 12 because Joseph becomes two. You're there. For the Lord had spoken unto Moses, saying, only thou shalt not number the tribe of Levi, neither take the sum of them among the children of Israel, but thou shalt appoint the Levites over the tabernacle of the testimony, over all the vessels thereof, and over all the things that belong to it. They shall bear the tabernacle and all the vessels thereof. They shall minister unto it, and shall encamp round about the tabernacle. And when the tabernacle setteth forward, the Levites shall take it down. And when the tabernacle is to be pitched, the Levites shall set it up, and the stranger that cometh nigh shall be put to death. Not a place to be taken to oneself. It is God who appoints. And the children of Israel shall pitch their tents, every man by his own camp, every man by his own standard, throughout their hosts. But the Levites shall pitch round about the tabernacle of the testimony, that there be no wrath upon the congregation of the children of Israel. And the idea is the Levites are camping directly around it, that the other people don't get too close and God won't judge them. The Levites shall keep the charge of the tabernacle of testimony. And the children of Israel did according to all the Lord commanded Moses, so did they. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, saying, every man of the children of Israel shall pitch by his own standard, the flag, the ensign, the insignia of their tribe. So they would see that flag and know that's where their camp was to be made. Jewish historians, by the way, tell us that every tent was pitched facing the tabernacle. They didn't face away because they were afraid of their enemies, because they knew God would deliver them. So as that camp, as everybody set up their tent, they pitched their tent facing the tabernacle. God was at the center of the nation. Imagine if you had insomnia. Now, I love the desert anyway. The desert's beautiful at night, the stars. Imagine if you had an insomnia just going to the door of your tent and sitting there, and out the door of your tent you see this column of fire just going up into the sky in the center of the nation, the presence of God. Wow. I'd probably be up every night. I'd be sleeping during the day. They will pitch, God says, their tents according to their congregation shall they pitch. Verse 3. Now, it's going to give us a description of the camp. We'll work through it, hopefully, so we can get a picture of it. On the east side, we're going to look at the east side. This is self-explanatory. The west side, the north side, and the south side. Okay. On the east side, toward the rising of the sun, shall they of the standard of the camp of Judah pitch throughout their armies, and Nashon, the son of Amminadab, shall be captain of the children of Judah. Now, what we're going to find is there are four flags. Judah will be on the east side, and on the flag of Judah is the face of a lion. And there it'll be blowing in the wind, and there are two other tribes that are to camp on that side with Judah. It will be the camp of Judah, even though there will be three tribes there. On another side will be the camp of Ephraim with the calf on the flag. Another side will be the camp of Dan with an eagle on it, and another one the camp of Reuben with the face of a man. Now, we're going to talk about that a little bit. It's very interesting the way those flags are arranged. The interesting thing is that Nashon, who is the head of the tribe of Judah, camped under the lion on his flag, will always be the first into battle. Now, you'll find Nashon in Matthew chapter 1, in the genealogy of Jesus. Nashon is the man that has the Messiah in his loins, his lineage, his seed. And when this camp marches and it goes to battle, Jesus is marching first in Nashon. He leads with the flag of the lion going before this nation. And how beautiful and remarkable the things are that are taking place, and how little, I'm sure, they understood. But how beautiful for us to look at these things. So this standard first, Nashon, the son of Amminadab, the captain of the children of Judah. It says, of his hosts that were numbered with him. Now it, you know, points us back to the first chapter, 74,600. Those that do pitch next to him shall be of the tribe of Issachar. This is still on the east side. And of Issachar, verse 6, there will be 54,400. And then also on the east side with Judah is Zebulun. And there will be 57,000, verse 8, 400 of Zebulun, all that were numbered in the camp of Judah. So Issachar, Zebulun, and Judah all camped on the east side. All that were numbered, verse 9, of the camp of Judah were 186,400 throughout their armies. These shall first set forth. So they would march first. God's giving marching orders. So the total on this side, and this is from Leah, she would be shocked. God had promised Abraham, your seed shall be as the stars of heaven, as the sand. Now from Leah, somebody said, Leah, those are your kids out there. Just the boys, 186,400. These will be set forth first. Now on the south side, we looked at the east side, shall be the standard of the camp of Reuben, which is the face of a man on that flag, the set off on that side. And of Reuben, verse 11 tells us, there will be 46,500 fighting men. Simeon, verse 12, those which pitch by him shall be of the tribe of Simeon. Verse 13 tells us there will be 59,300 of Simeon. And of Gad, verse 14, their number, down to 15, will be 45,650. All that were numbered in the camp of Reuben were 151,450 throughout their armies, they shall set forth in the rank second. So these three tribes, first the tribes on the east would march as they went forth, Judah leaving Nashon at the front with the flag and the ensign of the lion. Following them would be these three tribes. They set forth second. Then, verse 17 says, six tribes in the front, then the tabernacle would move after the first six tribes, then there will be six tribes behind the tabernacle. So, verse 17 says, then the tabernacle of the congregation shall set forth with the camp of the Levites in the midst of the camp. As they encamp, so shall they set forth every man in his place by their standards. Now on the west side shall be the standard of the camp of Ephraim, which was the face of a calf on that flag on the west side now, according to their armies. And the captain of the sons of Ephraim, and it gives his name, the total of their host, verse 19, is 40,500. With him, verse 20, shall be the tribe of Manasseh, with Ephraim there, his brother. Verse 21 says, and those that are numbered of Manasseh, their army, 32,200. And with them is Benjamin, verse 22. And of Benjamin, verse 23, 35,400. All that were numbered of the camp of Ephraim were 108,100. Now, imagine, these are the children of Rachel, Joseph and Benjamin. Rachel was the one who cried because she couldn't have any kids. She can stop crying now. 108,100 fighting men from Rachel. 25, finally on the north side, the standard of the camp of Dan, which was an eagle. On the north side by their armies, and the captain of the children of Dan shall be Ahiezer, it tells us, and verse 26, of Dan, 62,700. With them, verse 27, with the tribe of Dan and their banner, Asher. Verse 28 says, of Asher, there will be 41,500. And then the tribe of Naphtali, also with Dan and Asher, verse 29. And verse 30 says, of the tribe of Naphtali, there will be 53,400. And all that are numbered in the camp of Dan were 157,600. And look, it says, they shall go hindmost with their standards. Now, you know, somebody's going to say, why do we go last? Why do we have to march last? We last. Judah gets to be first. Why do we have to be last? No, no, no. Important place. You remember that Amalek attacked the hinder part. Amalek attacked those that were weak and those that were lagging behind. Dan and the tribes with him take the position of guarding the rear, and those that were weaker that would fall behind, the armies would be there to guard them. And it was a position that was important as they went forth in their journey. Now the thing that you have to see here that's very interesting is, you remember that when we get to the book of Revelation and we look at the throne of God, the cherubim are there and camped around the throne of God. And it tells us they have the face of a lion, of a man, of an ox, and of an eagle. Here's the camp of Israel with four flags flying around the tabernacle. The face of a lion, the face of a man, the face of an ox, and the face of an eagle. In the center of the nation, the presence of God. And God is measuring everybody to the north, to the south, to the east, to the west. All are measured in proximity to himself. All of their lives, all of their tent doors are pitched in his direction. He knows their tribes. He knows where they're camped. He knows their numbers. He knows their ages. He knows their children. He knows their little ones. He knows their wives. He knows their address. He knows your phone number. He knows where you are. He knows where you camp. Again, I shared this morning, a lot of you come and you camp in the same place every week. I see your faces. I know you get me all freaked out if you sit someplace where you don't belong. So I'm used to seeing you in the right place. Now I don't have to worry about you because I know you're there and you won't do anything by surprise. But you know what it's like if you come in and you see somebody in your camping spot? And you have to try to have a Christian look on your face? Oh, no, no, it's okay. You sit there. Not next week, though. You know, it's one of the things that tortures me when I go to speak somewhere else, because I don't know if anybody's where they should be. You know, I look at them and I don't know. You know, here I know who's going to sleep. God bless you. You sleep every week. I say that's okay. You know, I know when we sing. You know, who's that person that sounds like a cat with a truck parked on the thing? I know who that is. Okay, I'm singing with all of their heart. I know who's going to cough. I know who has the strangest laugh in the congregation. You know what I mean? I mean, and nothing takes me by surprise. You know, you kind of get used to it, and we're all here together, and we can move in our journey together here through the Old Testament. Well, God knows us more intimately. He knows where we camp. He knows where we live. He measures our lives in proximity to His own person, to His presence. He knows whether we live on one side of His presence or on the other side of His presence. To the Israelite, if he went to visit a cousin or somebody from another tribe, everybody was measured, well, he's on the north side, he's on the south side. It was all in proximity to the presence of God. And He measured our lives the same way. Now, there's another interesting thing about this camp. Some feel that they camped around the tabernacle with the tribe with the flag the furthest away and then two tribes in between. Now, if that's true, it's very interesting, because the tribe to the north and the tribe to the south both have 150-some thousand. The tribe to the west only has 108,000, and the tribe to the east has 186,000. Now, if you line them up in lines, that means the north and the south side are of an equal distance. It means that the west side is much shorter, and it means that the east side is twice as long. And of course, if you look at that from above, it's a cross. Little did they know. And God was ordering all of this. And they couldn't say, well, I'm going to go camp somewhere else. I'm going to camp. No. And God places us in His body today the same way He tells us in 1 Corinthians 12, that as the Spirit decides, He gives us gifts. And He places us in His body to serve, to be warriors, to be workers, to be worshipers. Everyone in this room is called to a ministry. And again, you know, we have people that are anxious to get up here and lead worship, you know. And that's for some people to do. We don't have people in line. Let me in that nursery. I want to change a poopy diaper. I just want to serve Christ. You know, I just, you know, give one of these little ones. Bless them, you know. Well, let me tell you, the person who's faithful there will get the same reward that's faithful here. There's somebody who is faithful in their ministry as an usher and is more faithful as an usher than I'm being as pastor. When we get to heaven, they will get more rewards than I will. Pray for these guys who stand outside in the cold and the rain, our security guys. And man, I'm amazed. I come, they're smiling, how you doing? I mean, I'd be saying, Lord, move me to another ministry, Lord. I feel a calling to the south, Lord, you know. God places them all where He sees fit. They camp in the position that He gives them to camp in. Boy, I don't know if we can do this. I know you'd like to do it as fast as we possibly can here. Look at verse 32. These are those which were numbered of the children of Israel by the house of their fathers. All those that were numbered of the camps throughout their host were 603,550. But the Levites were not numbered among the children of Israel as the Lord commanded. We find out there's 22,000 of them. And the children of Israel did according to all that the Lord commanded Moses. So they pitched by their standards, and so they set forth everyone after their families according to the house of their fathers. What an incredible scene, of course, this is. As we get to this third chapter, and we can't do this tonight, there are certain of the Levites that are given charge over the ark and over those holy things. There are certain families of the Levites that are given charge over the tabernacle, the coverings, the badger skins, and so forth, all of that. There's a third family that is given charge over the frame and the sockets and the poles. And again, we do the same thing, you know. Hey, we carry the ark, definite article, capital T. We, our family, we carry the ark. I mean, you guys are carrying badger skins, you know. Poles. We appreciate that, but we carry the ark, you know. And somebody else is saying, well, without a badger skins, you don't have anything to put it in. We carry the tabernacle. And without us, you don't have any place to put the ark. And somebody else is saying, well, we carry the frame. And if we don't bring the frame, you have nothing to put the tabernacle on that the ark goes in. No. That's not going on. You know, God has appointed them their service. He's appointed them their positions. He's appointed them the way they serve. And every one of them in their service makes this nation what it needs to be in their journeyings. And it's the same with us. And he knows each of us here this evening. Again, we mentioned this morning, Psalm 56, verse 8. The psalmist says, thou tellest all my wanderings. You know my whole life's journey, Lord. You saved all my tears in your bottle. Are they not written in thy book? You know, God is great at numbering simply because his love reaches down to us as individuals. So you look across this room, you see thousands of people. God sees individuals. He knows you and loves you. He knows every tear you've ever cried. He has saved it and recorded it. Every tear you cried when you thought he didn't hear you and he didn't care and he wasn't being fair to you or he wasn't showing you his love. No, he recorded every tear, tells us in the Psalms. Every tear recorded. He knows all of your wanderings, all of your steps, where you've been. Again, Matthew chapter 10 tells us there that not even one sparrow can fall to the ground except that he takes notice of it. And it says, you are of much more value than many sparrows. In fact, you're so important to God, it says, the very hairs of your head are numbered, not counted, numbered. Each hair has a number on it. When you lose one hair, God says, you know, there goes number 4,260. He is that intimate with you. To look into your face, he knows your freckles. He knows how many eyelashes you have. He knows how many hairs are on your eyebrow. He knows your name. He knows our thoughts. Knows our journeyings, our tears, our camp, our home, our telephone number, our address. And he keeps remarkable records.